Good evening. Welcome to the PSI podcast. My name is Kat. I will be your host for this evening. And on behalf of PSI Seminars, welcome to the podcast. PSI has been offering personal growth seminars around the world for over 45 years. And each month on these trainings, we explore tools and techniques from the PSI Basic course as a free resource for you in your ongoing personal growth and self-improvement. For those of you who are new to PSI seminars and would like to find out more about our basic course, go to psibasicseminar.com, where you'll find information about the PSI Basic, as well as the dates and locations for upcoming classes. That's psibasicseminar.com. The topic for tonight's training is Why We Do What We Do with PSI facilitator Cortland Warren. Cortland is an instructor for the PSI Basic Seminar for over 13 years now. Cortland, maybe it's probably more than that. He attended all of the classes in 2001. He is very passionate about this work and loves assisting other people in their own personal transformation. Cortland, are you with us?
I am, Kat, and thank you very much for such a kind introduction. And to those of you who made yourself a priority by giving your time and attention or investing your time and attention to this call, congratulations to you. Tonight, we are tasked with answering one of the more pressing questions that I've ever been asked in the personal development space. And it's interesting that with this being the topic, I was able to closely examine myself, my actions, my behaviors, in an effort to be of greater assistance and service to you. So let's just get going. The question that I have, a series of questions for you, and whether you're driving or listening in the gym or whatever your listening vehicle or mechanism is, in the last 30 days, have you overeaten? And in the last 30 days, have you eaten some unhealthy food? Over the last 30 days, have you withheld love or affection? We've all heard that one of the keys to successful relationships is communication. And have you, in the last 30 days, let's say, just decided to shut down your communication or even resign and choose not to communicate at all? In the last 30 days, now I don't get to see your face, so you don't have to raise your hand on this one, but in the last 30 days, have you texted or looked at your phone while you were driving? In the last 30 days, have you known a specific action to take and you didn't take it? And you knew that by taking that action, it would have furthered a dream that you have for yourself, either personally or professionally. The likelihood is that you answered yes to at least, if not multiple, ones of those questions. And so it is, so we can know that, well, okay, overeating or eating unhealthy food or shutting down in communication and forbid texting while driving is not the right thing to do. It's not actually very smart. It's not wise in by any stretch. And yet, I've done it, and it's very likely that you've done it. So why do we do the things that we know don't serve us? Now, on the flip side of that, have you ever had the experience of being motivated, like really motivated, for like a day or maybe a couple of hours? And in that couple of hours or for that short period of time, you got a lot of incredible things done. Like you were woman or man on a mission. And there's a part of you that knows that if you are able to maintain that level of energy, that level of effectiveness, that level of motivation for an extended period of time, you would have a more fulfilling life, right? So, and it's likely that you had times like that. So it's not only for us tonight to, or during this time, to look at why we do the things that we know we ought not do. Why do we not do the things that we know to do? And if by the end of this call, we are able to close the gap between knowing and doing, it would have been valuable time, or at least time well spent and invested. And that's what we will attempt to do. So it is less about, and one of the things that I love about the PSI seminars curriculum, it is not about a person, an instructor, facilitator telling you what to do. It is less about someone telling you how you ought to live or need to live or should be living your life. But we really work from the true meaning of the word educate, which is taken from the Latin root word educo or edeco, which means to draw out or to develop from within. And we work from the premise that the best answers are within you already. So this our time here won't be about me telling you what you need to do or should do, but rather let's close the gap between the knowing and the doing. Like if you've ever made a mistake before, and then you promised yourself that you were never going to make that mistake again, and you made the same mistake again, then you will agree that there's sometimes where there's a wide gap between knowing and doing. And so let's just dive right into that. The first thing to really get and understand, and this is the first premise of my sharing with you tonight, is to get a very deep understanding that you are not in control of your life. You are not, by that I mean, you are not running your life. Right now, I'm not, before you are ready to just hang up on the podcast, I'm not suggesting that someone else is. What I am asserting, though, with strong conviction, is that we are on full-blown automatic. So when I say that you are not running your life, what is running your life are your conditioning, your programs or paradigms, the ways that you see the world, you see yourself in the world, your beliefs, and some of them are empowering and others are disempowering beliefs that you have about yourself, about other people, about life, and about the world. Those ways of thinking are actually what's in control. And so we are on full-on automatic for, you know, 98% of our day, 98% of what you do, if not more, 98% of what you do on a daily basis, you're doing it on automatic, and it's the same way that you've been doing it since about 4 years old. And so you have what's called your ecology, and your ecology is essentially your frame of reference for the world. And this ecology is developed from ages 0 to 3. And, you know, so bring to mind a small child, and the qualities and characteristics of a small child would typically include how children are just sponges and they're soaking it all in. And what's happening is, as we come into the world for that first 3 years, we are learning how the world works. And where do we learn how it works? But from the most influential people in our lives. And that would be mom and dad, or whoever represents mom and dad to you. And so from their frame of reference, through their doubts, fears, beliefs, limiting beliefs about themselves, empowering beliefs about themselves, other people, life, or the world, we are like sponges soaking it in. We use their ways of thinking to become our frame of reference. And so your ecology is the frame of reference, and obviously it's different for everybody. So there's not one standard one. It is, and in your ecology is combined what you learned from your parents about the world, how much safety and belonging you experience also influences your ecology, how much you feel that you matter in the world, how you see the world and what you believe about the world and yourself in the world is also affecting your ecology or your frame of reference. Now, what happens is your ecology or your conditioning becomes your frame of reference, and then that now contributes to the map of the world that you're using to navigate getting things done. So your ecology, 0 to 3, you didn't have a lot of influence over. You were just a sponge soaking it all in, some of it effective and other parts of it not effective. Things that contribute to your ecology include your identity, your beliefs, your resourcefulness and how you see yourself and your ability to gather resources in order to get things done, your behavior, what you see as your capabilities or your strengths, as well as your limitations or your weaknesses. Now, through that ecology or that frame of reference, you create a map of the world. And your map of the world and how the world works and how to navigate the world will be vastly different than anyone else's. So what's happening is, now you say, so I got it. How does this now affect why I do what I do? So what I suggest that you are not in control or that you are not running your life, your programming and conditioning is running your life, and it's doing so on automatic because it's been in place for so long. And the reality is that very few people ever really take a close look at their map of the world and deliberately scrutinize it to determine if, whether or not that map of the world actually is effective for what they desire to create. Now, you're one of the people who at least will explore it because you're on a call like this, but even becoming aware of the fact that you have programs and that you have conditioning and you have this map of the world, to actually undo it or to reset the map is the journey of personal development. So what happens then is you have this this conditioning that is designed, and this is very important, it is designed to keep you safe and alive. So the second premise, so the first premise is you're not running your life, your programs and conditioning or your ecology is what's running your life. The second premise is that that conditioning is not designed for you to have a fulfilling and meaningful life. Now, I know this goes against and is really counterintuitive to what we hear a lot in personal development, but your subconscious mind's job is essentially to keep you safe. Its job is to keep you alive. Its job is to have you survive and live as long as you can. It is not so concerned with you having extraordinary success. It is concerned with your survival. It is not necessarily concerned with you thriving. And I want you to just like have that sit in for just a moment. So your conditioning and your programming, its job is to keep you safe, keep you comfortable, keep you out of harm's way, to have you protected, to keep you from hurt, to keep you from harm, to keep you from danger, so that you live longer. It doesn't necessarily care if you thrive. It doesn't necessarily care if you're fulfilled. It doesn't necessarily care if you have a life of meaning and have extraordinary experiences. So now we move into the why is it then that I don't do the things that I know to do? It is because your programming and your conditioning is more powerful than your intellect. Your programming and conditioning that has been ingrained at the subconscious level of mind and has been there for, you know, since at least 3 years old is stronger than your intellect. If you've ever had the experience, so take yourself back for a moment to when you first learned to drive a car, okay? And I'll give you a moment because, you know, some of us have to travel back further than others, right? I had my 16-year-old is just learning to drive, so I'm being reminded of what it's like to when you first learn. So take yourself back to when you first learned to drive. Maybe your knuckles were tight and gripped around the steering wheel. You were sitting up straight. The rear view mirror was in just the right place. And you were very conscious of everything that was necessary in order to move that vehicle. And now, fast forward to today, and have you ever had the experience of you pull into your driveway or you pull into your garage and it's like, how did I get here? Right? Well, my question to you is, who was driving? Like you were able to brake, accelerate, get off at the correct exit, turn right or turn left, slow down when need be. All the things necessary for you to get safely home. And you weren't even consciously aware of it. Why? Because you've done it so many times. Well, the same works for our predominant ways of thinking. And again, its purpose is to keep you safe, to keep you alive, so that you survive for a longer period of time. So then, when it comes to you knowing the action to take, you knowing the risk to take, you knowing what's necessary for you to expand your business, you knowing that, well, when it comes to relationship, open, honest, responsible communication, vulnerable and authentic communication is a way for a relationship to thrive, and yet you don't do it. Or you could know that, well, what's necessary is for me to get up and go to the gym, and yet we talk ourselves out of it, or we move into justifications. Why do we do that? It's simply because our intellect is not as strong as those conditioned ways of operating are. So you can be consciously aware of what's necessary, and yet the subconscious mind and its grip or its tight hold on our behavior, our feelings, our attitudes, and our actions is much stronger than what we know to do. So the first premise is that we're not in control. We're not running our life. We're on automatic, full-blown 98% of the time. The second second premise is that that ecology or that conditioning is designed to keep you safe, to keep you surviving, and not necessarily to have you experience a thriving and fulfilled life. Well, then we move to the third premise, and that is this. That third premise is that taking control back is the path to a fulfilling life and a life of meaning. So you actually doing the work to get off of automatic is the journey. So as you find yourself on the journey of breaking habits that don't serve, as you find yourself deliberately and intentionally giving yourself an instruction, following your own instruction, that is the journey of you getting back into control. So what's happening then is you are in a conflict. And what I want to encourage you around during this podcast is to note that there's not something wrong with you because you keep having this experience of perhaps falling back or not doing what you know to do. You are in a constant battle of wills. The ingrained and conditioned parts of you is in a battle with the desires that you have to grow and to expand. And that resistance that you experience, that part of you that knows what to do and is not doing it, that is a battle that must be fought every single day. And surrendering to that knowing and understanding is very freeing. You could perhaps be in a place where, well, okay, I've been studying, I've been attending courses, I've been listening to audios, I've been reading. I actually do the homework at the end of a chapter. I answer the questions at the end of a chapter when I do read. And yet this battle, this internal conflict or turmoil is still being experienced. And you could, if you're not mindful of it, you could actually be having the experience of, well, what's wrong with me? Hear this. There is nothing wrong with you. That battle is, as Pressfield said, that battle is a battle to be fought anew every single day. And so essentially it becomes winning the day. So you are in turmoil or conflict with the old against the new or the possibility. And when you consider that our conditioning is not really concerned with us thriving or even having a fulfilling life, you having the thriving and fulfilling life is a product of your willingness to go to work on it and be in the practice of it every single day. It is not magic, as one of my mentors, Kelly Poulos, would say. It is not magic. It is work. And so a commitment to the practice is what's necessary. So the answer to the question of why we do what we do is that we are conditioned to do it. Like when you're going through your, you know, those formidable years of learning how the world works and how you fit in the world and whether or not you matter, if whether or not you're important. A full from 0 to 4 years old, 83% of what a small child hears is the word no. 83% of your conditioning and programming is the word no. Now, mind you, a lot of those no's are to, you know, save your life. You know, don't stick your finger in the socket. You know, don't touch the hot stove. Don't get into the car with a stranger. Don't just run across the street without looking both ways. So a lot of those no's or derivatives of no are to, again, keep you alive, have you survive. So now, though, if 83% of what you heard during that time was the word no, fast forward to today, and there are things that you want to do, places that you want to go, experiences that you desire to have. And as you're thinking about doing it, or you set the goal to accomplish it, and there are these conversations of, well, no, not right now, wait till later, can't afford it, not my turn yet, probably not good enough, I'm not that important, I'm not that special. All of those are derivatives of the word no, or they're designed to keep you from taking the risk. Because the risk and taking it leads us to the unknown, which goes against what was established very early on with your ecology to keep you alive and to have you survive. So then how do we combat it? The way that we combat it is we create or develop a dream that is big enough that it compels you forward, and you must broaden the time horizon. So a lot of what keeps us stuck is the immediacy, or shall I say, immediate gratification. Okay, so immediate gratification is an incredible culprit for a life of meaning and fulfillment. We want what we want now. It's like when a small child wants something. When do they want it? They want it now. Could you imagine your small child or your, you know, grandson or granddaughter, you know, running into this toy store like, you know, Mom, Dad, can I have this in February? And here we are in October. Well, you know what? No, you know, I'm sorry. I lost my mind for a moment. I'm going to go take it back. And maybe as we're leaving, we'll get a brochure. And we can take that brochure home and peruse it a bit and then decide if this is the best option. Like if your son or daughter or granddaughter or grandson responded that way, you'd be like something's up, like something's wrong. No, that small child wants what they want now. And there's a part of you that wants what you want now. So the sugar or the sweet versus going to work out, there's immediate gratification that comes from that. Shutting down in my communication, there is that need of having things my way or the need to be right that gets in the way of that. And so we are. So you, what you must do then as a student of the work is you must broaden the time horizon. So you've got to stretch the time out and look down the road and be disciplined enough to answer for yourself in the affirmative if whether or not the action that you're taking currently is an action that will down the road get you to what you desire to have. You got to be disciplined enough to ask yourself and discern if whether or not what you're doing now will get you to where you desire to be. There is the cumulative effect that we're not able to see. It's like, you know, the boiled frog analogy, which I later found what wasn't exactly true. However, the analogy, and you very likely heard it before, goes that, well, if you wanted to boil a frog, you don't boil the water and then get it to the temperature of boiling and then drop the frog in because it would jump out. In order to boil the frog, you would, you know, put the frog in while the water is still lukewarm to warm. You would turn the heat up on it. And before the frog recognizes it, it's already boiling. All right. Now, your question might also be, well, why would I boil a frog? And I get it, but understand the analogy. So the cumulative effect of the small actions or the small habits that don't seem like a big deal right now are what actually gets in the way of us having the life of fulfillment and joy and love and dreams being accomplished. And so the discipline to look at your daily actions or what you accomplished in a week and be able to discern if, whether or not those actions will lead to you ultimately having what you desire, that is the way of mastery. And the only real answer to it is a life of being committed to staying in the practice. And the more addicted you are to immediate gratification, the further away you are from experiencing a life of fulfillment and joy. You think about, you know, what true entrepreneurs are able to do. They're able to, and they're disciplined enough to put the work in today for a product or a service down the road. And they're willing to put that work in before the masses even know it's a possibility. It brings me to, who comes to mind is Thomas D. Wilhite. And Tom Wilhite started, along with his wife Jane, Psi Seminars in 1973. Mr. Wilhite was deceased in 1983. Now, Ms. Wilhite continues to be the chairperson of and chairwoman of the organization. But think about, you know, so now we've been in existence for 46, moving into 47 years. And Mr. Wilhite was only around for 10 of those years. So when I think about leaving a legacy, I want you to imagine this for a moment. Imagine having made such an incredible contribution that it lives on 36 years or 37 years after you're deceased. To have created and contributed something that lives on for almost four decades and still thriving, but four decades later, it's still benefiting and being of service to people. See, inherent in leaving a legacy, there's a degree of unselfishness that's required on the person, that's required of the man or woman. Because to truly leave a legacy, you're not going to necessarily be there to see all the fruits of your labor. So you've got to be willing to be unselfish in your contribution. So when we speak of broadening the time horizon, what we're saying is expand your vision enough to look beyond the feeling today for what it's going to lead to down the road. Mr. Wilhite would say, do today what will make you feel good tomorrow. Do today the thing that will make you feel good tomorrow. So, you know, maybe I don't feel like working out today, but tomorrow I'm glad I did. Maybe I don't feel like, you know, writing the pages of my book today. However, tomorrow or next week or next year, I'll be glad that I did. So why we do what we do is a question that can be answered pretty simply. Right, we're driven by an internal need that gets filled when we take the action, whether that's the need to be right, the need to be in control, the need to have things our way, the need to be comfortable, the need to be liked. Those needs essentially usurp what we know to be doing, and it keeps the gap. It keeps the gap much wider. And so the answer then to how to solve that is by broadening your time horizon. And there's a particular exercise before I go back to Kat, and I know we have some questions. There's a series of questions that you can ask yourself that really does drive home your ability to broaden the time horizon. And so I'll give you a moment you can come back to the recording, but if you have a pen and paper, I'll go slowly with it. So how you're able to broaden that time horizon is you first answer the question, what would you like? Like, what do you want? Like, what's the goal? Okay, so what do I want? And then secondly, what will having it do for me? So what's the thing that you desire? What will having it do for you? Then thirdly, how will you know once you've got it? So the reason why, I just want to be happier or I want to be healthier. Those types of goals don't provide us with the discipline necessary to achieve it because it's too hard to discern when we've actually reached it. So how will you know when you have it? The fourth part of this is, so it's for you now to imagine. So there you are now in the future and you have what you want. What risk might you take to ensure that this change is going to happen? So imagine yourself with the goal and then look at your life today and what's the risk that you would have to take to ensure that it does happen? Then next, what will likely happen if you don't solve this problem? Or to say it differently, what will likely happen if you don't achieve it? Sometimes you have to look at the worst case scenarios. So it's not just about looking at the payoffs. Sometimes you got to look at, the prices. In a very fundamental way, the only reason why we take action comes down to basically pleasure and pain. There's either a pleasure that's promised or a pain that you want to get rid of. And then the next part, what would a person have to believe in order to create the thing that you desire? So in order to achieve it, what would a person have to believe? And then lastly, what will you appreciate most about having accomplished it? So now, by answering those questions, you have created a gap between the immediate sense of gratification and what would actually be necessary or required of you in order to accomplish it. So we are to recap, we looked at on this podcast the question, why do I do what I do? What are those inner drivers? And frankly, our basic seminar is 3 days and 10 hours each of those 3 days, really going in depth on assisting the participant in uncovering what are those predominant ways of thinking that make up your ecology. What are the predominant ways of thinking that lead to your behavior and actions? And so if you've not attended the basic seminar, I highly encourage it. So why do we do what we do? One, it's our ecology, how we've learned about how the world works and our place in the world. It's then to understand that our ecology or that conditioning is not for us to thrive and have truly our dreams, but rather to remain safe. And when it's time to risk or go take a chance, it's important to understand that, of course, that ecology and our conditioning is going to fight against us because its desire is to keep us safe and comfortable, and the unknowns don't provide that. So then the third premise is that in order for you to experience a life of fulfillment and incredible experiences, you must be disciplined enough to stay in the practice of daily fighting the battle between your conditioning and your desires. Right. So that's what I have for now, Kat. And I know we have some questions. I'm not sure where I am on time. I get going. You know how us facilitators do. But that said, I want to turn it back over to you.
Great. Thank you. Those were some great questions. Before we go into the questions that were submitted, I want to take a moment for everyone on the call who has not yet done our classes. If you want more tools to bring your best to your life, the PSI Basic course has extremely effective techniques that you can put into practice right away to expand yourself beyond what you previously thought possible. At the basic seminar, you get to uncover your limiting beliefs and discover what has been holding you back from living the life of your dreams. It's an experiential class where you will be immersed in powerful exercises and get to explore who you are, what you really want, and how to get where you want to go. Again, if there's anything you want more, better, or different for yourself and your life, then go to psibasicseminar.com and get registered for the next PSI Basic. We hold classes in cities across the country, so find a location and date that works for you. Again, that's psibasicseminar.com. So we'll start with this question from JM, who asks, why do I keep revisiting my past mistakes?
Great question, Jay. And the thing to understand when it comes to revisiting the past mistakes, it can actually be a function of remaining comfortable. Okay, and I know initially that's counterintuitive. However, by continuing to revisit past mistakes, then there's the comfort of not having to move forward. And so it is our minds are incredibly powerful, and we will hold on to experiences that we have emotional connections to because by holding on to those experiences, we don't have to move forward and take the risk of experiencing it again. So again, our subconscious conditioning or our ecology is designed to keep us safe, to have us survive. And if I've made a mistake before and that led to disappointment or hurt or disgust or regret or whatever it is, then in an effort not to have to experience that again, we'll continue to look backwards and ruminate over it. So by continuing to look backwards, there you're released of the responsibility of taking action to move forward. And so it is a very, it's a counterintuitive way intellectually, but then again, our programs are stronger than our intellect. And so it's really a way of remaining comfortable and safe. So you didn't ask for it, so what do I do about it? The thing to do about it is to create for yourself a vision of what you want that actually propels you forward and inspires you to take new and different action. Kat?
Great. I might also add in there some of the exercises in the basic around forgiveness. Good support with that too. Self-forgiveness. Next from SG, how can I get rid of fears and doubts to believe in myself more?
Let me say that I don't have the answer to that question completely because I still have fears and doubts also. So perhaps the thing to explore is not how do I get rid of them completely as much as how do I still take action in the face of or even though I have doubts and fears. And there are definitely ways of doing that. So give yourself a realistic sense of, you know, give yourself a realistic target, okay? So completely removing all doubt and fear, I don't believe is even doable. In fact, it's not even safe. Like we don't promote, let's say, fearlessness because there are times when fear actually saves your life. you're walking through a wooded area, there's a cave, and there's a growl that comes from that cave, it would serve you to be fearful and get out of the way. So, and then there are those that are not, there are fears that we have that don't serve us. And so in the face of those doubts and fears that you have that are not serving you, the way to take action includes surrounding yourself with people who will remind you of how great you are, even on the days that you forget. And then also, you want to get into the practice of celebrating your accomplishments and acknowledging yourself. So it's not that they have to be removed completely, and that's great news, because even though they're not removed completely, you can still take action. So one of the great benefits of being a Psi Seminars graduate is you have a community of support and people who will remind you of how great you are during times when you forget. And I'll just say that if you don't have people around you supporting you in winning, then it's likely that you're not dreaming big enough. Kat?
So next, we have quite a few questions about habits, such as why is it so hard to change our patterns, and what is the best way to stop bad habits, and what are the top three ways to not fall back into bad habits? So I was thinking you could address those together.
Excellent, excellent. What the latest research is showing us when it comes to getting rid of habits is to first note that you don't eradicate a habit. It has to be replaced. So you're being aware of a habit that is not serving you. It's not enough to know or to be aware of the fact that it's not working. It's not enough to just not want to do it anymore. You actually have to replace it with something else, or we fall back to what is the path of least resistance. So the habit that has been formed, and as it was taking shape, there were essentially neurological pathways that were being created. And those pathways become essentially the path of least resistance. So like Charles Duhigg in his book, The Power of Habit, speaks very eloquently and articulately on the subject to essentially say that it's not enough to want to change the habit. It's what are you going to replace it with? So you might say, well, okay, every time that I go to the fridge and I'm about to eat a food that is unhealthy or that goes against my diet, I'm going to call a friend. Or every morning, because it's tough for me to get out of bed and go work out, the night before, I'm going to lay out my workout clothes at the foot of the bed. So it's one thing to be aware that the habit exists. It is wholly and completely different to do the work of putting a new habit in place. So if you don't do it, you, just like everyone else, you will fall back into what pattern has already been, or the pattern that has been previously created. So rather than working against the norm or what is natural for us, you want to replace it versus just looking to eradicate it. So the question becomes, what are you going to replace it with? Kat?
Great. Next, from KL, where does the strong need to be the best come from, and how do I get rid of that for real?
I'm going to take some liberties here in what you're asking, because I would not, promote you being your best self or being the best version of you. If perhaps you're asking that what's the need to be better than, okay, and what drives the need to be better than someone else, that's different than I want to be my best, okay. And unless you're looking at if your best is perfection, and even though you can intellectually, you get that perfection isn't possible, there's always room for improvement, yet that's the only allowable standard, then you're essentially setting yourself up for failure. And every time you don't get it, then a limiting or negative belief is reinforced, is reconfirmed. So you may be essentially setting yourself up not to ever be able to win because it feeds the disempowering belief, which again, keeps you comfortable, keeps you safe, keeps you where you are, and no new experiences are being had. If it is along the lines of, okay, well, what is this need that I have to be better than someone else? It's really two sides of the same coin. That better than someone else, if it feeds a real underlying a paradigm or ecology of I'm not good enough or I'm not deserving, then out of sheer will and determination, we will look to be better than other people, even if it means bringing them down a notch or finding the holes or the chinks in them so that we feel uplifted. Now, I know you get that that's not sustainable. However, in the short term, so back to what we were saying earlier, the immediate gratification of feeling better is sometimes the result of seeing the deficiencies in or the faults in someone else. So it's not long term. It doesn't lead to a fulfilling and a thriving life. And so to eradicate it, there again, get the focus off of you and get your focus on contribution. So once you move you shift the attention off of, all right, it's just me and how am I looking? How am I doing? And you move it to whose life is being improved, whose life is better because I exist or because I'm making this contribution, then that takes the shift and attention off of you and on creating and developing a legacy. And so that's a way to do it. Kat?
Next from CH, why am I the queen of procrastination?
Well, first of all, queen. There are probably some people on this call who would definitely argue with you on that one, all right? And I get it. So you look out into your life and you're like, wow, I am forever putting off for tomorrow what I could have did in the last 30 minutes. I am like, why do I do this? And so it is what I would encourage you to do is to look at the ways that you procrastinate. Like, I might procrastinate by going to the golf course. Someone else might procrastinate by, so on social media or, binge watching their favorite shows. So look at what it is that you do when you're procrastinating and what need is being filled when you're doing that activity instead of what you're saying you want to do. So if you look at it and say, well, what I do is I watch TV instead. Well, what's the need that is being filled? For some, it might be I spend a lot more time on the phone or I'm on social media because I don't want to be left out. I always want to be abreast of what's happening. I don't want to be left out of the loop when it comes to information. So look at when you are procrastinating, what is the need that is being filled? And then when you look at the thing that you're saying you want to do, how does taking that action also fill the need? So you got the immediate gratification and then broadening the time horizon. Where can that need also be met by you doing the thing that you desire to do? But essentially, it comes down to when you say, why am I the queen? Is because essentially you're choosing comfort over greatness. And so you look, you say, well, okay, in these moments, I would rather be comfortable than be great. And, perhaps that works for you. And that might be enough to have you shift into what do I want to be doing? What do I want to create? What's the legacy that I desire to live? And how does doing that and taking that action feel the need that's being served currently by the ways that you procrastinate? Kat?
Great. That leads into this next question from JR. How do we find our passion? What makes us happy?
It's a very... And I'm being very cautious as I say this. Okay. because I know it flies in the face of a lot of what we've heard in personal development. It is a very romantic idea that we come into the world with a purpose, and it's a romantic idea. There's just no proof of it. What I believe actually happens is we decide on a purpose, or we pick the place that we're going to serve. If I'm of the notion that I have a purpose and I have to go out and find it, JR, then I could forever be on the search. If the view is that I have to find what my purpose is, then it becomes an incredibly brilliant distraction, because I'm not accountable for taking deliberate action, because I'm still in search of, I'm still looking for it, I'm still working on it, I'm still trying, I'm doing my best, versus I pick the place where I'm going to contribute. I pick the place that is going to be my passion for now. So think about just how much more empowering that is. So rather than being on this endless search that may or may not ever end, where you have to find your purpose, and then after uncovering it, you got to know for sure that that's the one, it can lead into a spiral, this vicious cycle of you constantly questioning and doubting and not moving forward, versus recognizing that you are empowered to create a life by design. And because of who you are and how powerful you are, you can decide that this is the place, this is the area where I'm going to make a great contribution. I'm thinking about one of our graduates. His name is Trevor. Trevor has determined that he's going to contribute to the world as an electrician. We have other graduates who have determined that they're going to contribute to the world via music. For others, it's in their writing. You decide where you're going to make a difference, and that will let you off the hook of continually searching. So decide on a place, have that be the place where you contribute, and get about the business of making the world a better place. Kat?
Love that, Cortland. Next from PL, how can I prevent self-sabotage?
Well, it may be that I think, you know, in listening to the nature of the questions, I get that this topic is a very important one, and maybe at some point down the road we explore it even more deeply, Kat. But what we're looking for are some of the questions. It's like we're looking for a catch-all solution. And I assure you that if I knew of one, or if there was one, I would have shared it. However, what we know to be true is that the battle against this struggle and this conflict between your conditioning and your desires, that battle has to be fought every single day. So to assert that I could share something with you that would have you never again self-sabotage is, I don't feel in integrity doing that. What I can say is that when we sabotage ourselves, when we sabotage ourselves, it is not a conscious act. It is subconscious. And when we do it, it is the nature of the action to keep us comfortable, to have us survive, and we must practice self-forgiveness and move forward, like in the next round or the next day. Okay, so we don't at site seminars, we don't You know, it's a philosophy, not suggesting that it is the one and only philosophy. Okay. But the idea that you could have something that will keep you from ever sabotaging yourself again, you're setting yourself up to be in search for an answer that does not exist. And so by having this question that you are seeking an answer to that has no answer, then it keeps you constantly, you know, swirling or spinning in the same place. What if you were equipped with tools and techniques, which are provided in the basic seminar? What if you were equipped with tools and techniques that enabled you to respond faster when you recognize that you've done a bit of sabotaging? So rather than say, okay, we can remove it completely, what if you had tools and techniques that enable you to respond more quickly when you recognize that it happens, that it has happened, or to notice your patterns of behavior when you're about to do it so that you can do something different in the face of it? Because again, you're not in control. Your conditioning is running, and the practice is to become more aware of when it's running you and not leading you to where you desire to be. Kat?
We have another group of questions that are similar, such as, how can you best conquer self-limiting beliefs? How can I reprogram my belief system? And what is the best way to rewire your brain for success? And, you know, our Life Success course is really designed for this. And I was hoping for all the people on the call who have not yet done our various classes, if you could speak to them about not only address these questions, but also what makes the PSI series of classes so effective.
Excellent. Well, first of all, this series of questions, in my view, it is the most important work that you can be doing. The work on mindset, the work on reshaping and reframing how you see the world and your place in it. From zero to eight, you know, those 80% of programming and conditioning that we received, you didn't really have a say on. Okay, you just absorbed it as a child does. Having the wherewithal or the insight to want to undo those ways of thinking that don't work is the most important work that you can do. We say in all of our courses that to think is to create. And so by that, what we're getting at is that everything is created twice. Whatever tool you're using to listen to this podcast, the clothing that you have on, the car that you drive, the building that you're in, the park bench that you're sitting on, right? It's created twice. It's created first in the mind of the person that has the idea. And so to do the work of reshaping how you see yourself and what you believe, it is the most important work that can be done. How our programming and conditioning gets put in place, to address that part, how it gets put in place is through an emotional connection to an event or experience. And we have these events or experiences, and we have sometimes an inaccurate interpretation of that event or experience. And our inaccurate interpretations can sometimes lead to disempowering beliefs. So that's how they get into place. How then do you put a new belief in place? Well, you put a new belief in place the same way that the old one got put in place, through an emotional connection to an event or experience. Now, notice what goes on for you when I say an emotional connection to, because when I speak of emotional connection, that doesn't just mean pain, sadness, hurt, disappointment, right? Love, joy, excitement, enthusiasm. Those are also emotional experiences. And so the emotional connection to an event or experience is the way that the new way of thinking gets supplanted at the subconscious level of mind. What is brilliant about the design of the curriculum of PSI seminars, beginning with the 3-day course, the basic seminar, it is step one, become aware of the thinking that is underneath, that's driving you in the first place. Become aware of the map that you're using to navigate your world. see the ways of thinking. Now, if you just left it at awareness, nothing is going to be different. Like I could say, my relationship could use some work. I'm aware of that. And what just happened? Nothing. Is it important that I be aware of it, though? Yes. So once you become aware, then there's the work of recognizing that you don't have to respond to those ways of thinking, and in this instance, limiting beliefs. You don't have to respond to them the way that you have always responded to them. You don't have to live your life on automatic with these disempowering beliefs, driving the car or being in control. That's our 7-day course. It's 7 days of you having events whereby you have evidence of having responded differently in the face of what your disempowering beliefs would have otherwise instructed you to do. And this is a very empowering place to operate from when you can feel the fear and do it anyway. You move through your issues with trust. You break through your beliefs around lack or scarcity, or you recognize that you do have a purpose and you become more clear about it. So step one, become aware that the beliefs exist. Step two, have the experience of responding to them differently. And as a result of that, you're more powerful. Step three, our leadership courses are really for as your vision expands and you see yourself contributing to the world in a bigger, broader, more bold way, then now the focus is off of just you and what's the difference that I can make in the world, whose life will be better because I've lived here. And once you've done the, once you've gone through the experience of breaking through the limiting beliefs that keep you from seeing that you have a place in the world in the first place, by the time you get to the leadership seminars, you not only are aware of it and have done the work of responding differently to the limiting beliefs, you actually see a place for you to go out and make a difference in the world. That's the way that I see our classes working, Kat.
That's great. It all starts with the PSI Basic Seminar. And if you're interested, you can go to psibasicseminar.com to find locations and class dates to get started. So before we wrap up the call, Courtland, do you have some takeaway points from your teaching for us?
Absolutely. And I want to, again, acknowledge you for being on the call, and to you, Kat, for month after month, month after month, ensuring that these podcasts happen. If you're a person who's listening, know that it's not a coincidence that you're on the call. And if you'll go out and practice with it, I am certain that you will see improvement. Know that the battle that you're in is one that has to be fought daily. There's nothing wrong with you because you keep coming up against it. That doesn't mean that there's something wrong with you. The fact that you keep looking for more to uncover and discover is because, and you keep finding new things to work on, is because you're part of the infinite. And so the more you go to uncover, the more is going to be there. So be good to yourself in that regard. But this work is really about being in the practice. This podcast can be a part of your weekly, daily life. Come and be a part of the basic seminar if you've not. Surround yourself with people who want to see you win, and know that if you're going to truly experience a fulfilling life, you've got to be willing to delay the immediate gratification. Okay.
What an excellent training. Thank you so much, Courtland, for sharing your wisdom and insights with us tonight.
Thank you very much for inviting me to be on the call. I'm grateful, and thanks to those of you who are listening for some of your time and attention.
Yes, definitely. Thank you to everyone listening in. We hope that you enjoyed the topic and have some new tools to move you forward in the pursuit of your dreams and goals. If you're getting value from the PSI podcast, don't forget to rate us and post a review on iTunes. You definitely don't want to miss next month's training. It's scheduled for Tuesday, November 12th with PSI facilitator Rob Rowe. You can register now at psilive.com. And remember to ask your questions when you register. Again, that's psilive.com. Again, for those of you who are new to PSI seminars and would like to find out more about the PSI Basic course, you can go to psibasicseminar.com, where you'll find information about the class as well as upcoming dates and locations. That's psibasicseminar.com. Thank you, everyone, for being on the training tonight. We appreciate you taking the time out to listen in. Have a great night.